Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
It's the Police Officers Association of Michigan podcast radio show, recorded live from our studios in Redford, Michigan. HOME is a full-service labor organization formed to provide every labor-related service from negotiations, grievance processing, legal and legislative representation to Act 312 arbitrations.
We'll get by with it. Tim was a firefighter at the World Trade Center and is going to share with us some of that story and some of the things that have occurred since that he's been involved in. More recently, you may have seen him. He was active, very active, around the first of the year when they were trying to pass legislation, federal legislation, to provide a health care benefit for those people who had responded to the scene, not only New York City firefighters and police officers, but I know we have some of you that are in here today that actually had gone out to the World Trade Center in the weeks following that to help with the rescue efforts and the other things that went on there. And a lot of those people were very sick and are continuing to be discovered as sick. And what Tim did was go on the bandwagon and into Washington to help get some money put aside for that, so that in years to come there will be a benefit there for those people that found themselves ill because of it. So Tim Brown, again, you've seen him on Fox and Friends here lately. He's become a regular on there. I don't know if they're going to give him his own show. Seems like it's been that way. But please welcome Tim Brown, New York City firefighter, a good friend of mine.
Thank you. Is this one working? Yeah. All right, we'll just put it there. Thank you. Thanks, Jim. And I will always be your friend. I have a lot of thank yous I want to say here. So first of all, for whoever came to help us, especially 10 years ago, you have my personal gratitude for showing us how great America is. And I'll talk more about the American human spirit as I get into my story, but you guys demonstrated that to us. There's actually a group in New York called New York Says Thank You, and they're traveling around the country with one of the flags from Ground Zero and thanking everyone for everything that America did for us. And I also want to say thank you to whoever it is in the audience that supported Rudy almost 4 years ago now. It meant a lot to me personally and to him. The POEM was the first public safety organization to endorse him in that election. I apologize for how the campaign went, but it's still from the bottom of my heart, and Jim and the board and all our friends, thank you very much for that. God bless SEAL Team 6. They showed the world that America still has teeth, and that if you bite us, we're going to come find you. Even if it's 10 years later, we're going to come find you and we're going to bite you back. And of course, all the good people that we'll never know also in the CIA who worked so hard tracking down this intelligence over the last 9 years. It is because of enhanced interrogations that some of this information was gotten to us that we acquired with the nickname that eventually the good people in CIA were able to figure it out. Let's think of these words. We say it all the time, but let's think about the words. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, right? It's allegiance to our flag for this country. We should be proud of that, and we should honor that. And to the republic for which it stands. That's what we are, a republic. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Liberty and justice. Liberty is freedom. Freedom of thought. Freedom of personal thought. Freedom to guide your life, to live your life the way you see fit. That's what we were founded on here. And justice. Justice is for everyone. Equal justice. Not justice for you, but not for you. Equal justice. The people that flew the planes into those buildings on September 11th, 2001, want to take that away from us. Their ideology is the opposite of ours. It's not the same, as some would make you think. How many people in here know what Sharia law is? Put your hand up. Sharia. Okay, not too many, but we're getting there. That's my job now, is to teach America about Sharia law. That's what these guys want to impose in America. That is the law of the land in, well, was in Afghanistan, in Iran, and other places. It's not freedom. And it's certainly not liberty and justice for all. Women don't have the same rights that men do in those countries. A woman gets raped. She needs more than one male witness to testify that she was raped. Otherwise, she gets charged with adultery. True. This is serious stuff. There are places in this country where Sharia law has been tested in American courts, and the judges have said, well, that's your religion, it's okay, even though it broke American laws. In 23 states, that's occurred in this country. Luckily, some common sense judges that were a little higher up the food chain overturned those decisions. It is happening here in this country. It is happening here in Michigan. This is serious stuff. I'm going to lighten up. Let me tell you about cops. This is going to be fun.
Remember where you're at.
You know, we've always had the rivalry. Actually, it's interesting. Jim and I just were talking about the new thing, the public safety officers, and how it's resisted by the fire service. I mean, it's gonna happen no matter what. Nobody's gonna stop that. And I think that's a good thing. 37 Port Authority police officers. 23 New York City police officers were murdered on September 11, 2001 by radical Islamic terrorists. 37 Port Authority police officers is the largest single loss of life in any police department in the country's history. And they're a small police department. That's who was in the building with us doing what you guys do every day. So we can joke around. I can call you copper. You can call me firefighter. And it's all fun, but we were in there together in that building, those buildings. In the fire department, everybody knows 343 firefighters were killed. Big number, obviously the biggest loss of life in a fire department in the country's history. What people don't know so much is that 100 of those firefighters were special operations firefighters. The entire on-duty shift of special operations of the New York City Fire Department was killed that day, was murdered that day, from Chief Downey all the way down to the newest special operations firefighter. They were the most highly trained and most experienced firefighters probably in the world as a group. And they were wiped out in one day. I was assigned to the mayor's office of emergency management that day. I was a supervisor. I had about 15 first responders that worked for me, some cops, some firefighters, some environmental folks, health folks. And we took care of the field operations. Anytime there was a major disaster, I would send a couple of the guys out to go represent the mayor. It was a good system. Our office was on the 23rd floor of 7 World Trade Center. Probably not such a good place to be that day. But we had an amazing EOC, state of the art. We were in the building with the FBI, with the CIA, with some other federal agencies, ATF. When the first plane came in, I was in the mezzanine having my Cheerios and in a little restaurant. And the people sitting at the front window, all of a sudden, the power went out in the building and it came back up about 7 seconds later. I knew something major had happened. The people were sitting at the window came running toward me and screaming. And I grabbed one girl by the shoulders and I had to stop her and look her in the eye and I said, "What happened?" And she said, "A plane just hit the tower." I said, "Oh, shit." So, you know, at that moment, you don't realize the gravity of what's beginning to happen. My job was to get my guys in the right position to assist the incident commander and to represent the mayor. I went up to the 23rd floor, got my radios, made sure our dispatch office was staffing up, made sure that our emergency operations center was getting powered up and that everybody was being called to come in to assist us and to coordinate everything, city, state, federal. We were very good at it. I made sure the right supervisors were doing what they needed to do in each of those places, and then I proceeded to do my job. Like they train firefighters, before you go in a building, you try and see three sides of it. You try and get a visual in your head so when you're inside the building, you kind of understand what's the building you're in. So I went up the stairwell. They call it the survivor stairs now. I went up that stairwell and went around to the exposure two and three side, and I of Tower One, and I saw in the area between the towers where that globe, you know, that globe is, that's become famous now. That whole area was destruction. There were plane parts. There were bodies. Stuff was on fire. Jet fuel. The papers were all flying in the air. It was at that point that I began to realize this plane was bigger than I had thought. When I went in that level into Tower One, there were escalators and civilians were evacuating, office workers. And they were calm, orderly evacuation. Some were hurt, not too bad, not this group, not yet. They were below the impact. But one of the things I noticed that burned into my memory was that for every person that was obese, pregnant, disabled, there were about 4 or 5 regular people, regular Americans, that were helping that person. And I said, there's the human spirit. There's the American spirit. And I knew in my heart at that moment that we would be okay no matter what happened here. Because when the shit's on, we're there and we help each other. Regular people, not cops and firemen, just regular people. I went down the escalator down to where the fire command station was and went over to the incident commander. I was trying to coordinate things. As I was getting over there, I went by the core of the building where the elevators and the stairwell were, and there was about 30 or 40 firemen there. And in that crowd, I saw my best friend, Terry Hatton, who was a captain of Rescue One. He was tall. He was taller than everybody else. And he saw me over the crowd, and he went, "T, come here." So I went over to him. He had the Halligan in his hand, and he put his big arms around me, and he squeezed me tight, and he put his lips right on the side of my face, And he said, "I love you, brother. I may never see you again." And I kind of laughed it off. But Terry was a visionary. He always saw 10 steps ahead of everybody else. And he understood the gravity of what he was doing. They made it up, his team, Rescue One, made it up to the 83rd floor of Tower One. And they didn't, none of them came back. I was at the fire command station when a fireman came running through the where the stores were kind of a mezzanine level, and he was yelling, "Another plane hit the other building." Okay. Most of you guys probably saw that on television. At that moment, what did you think? Yeah. I was ordered with Chief Donald Burns, assistant chief in the fire department, old, salty, 40-year-old, 40 years in the fire department, fire chief, Irish guy. And as we were hustling over to go into Tower 2 to set up the command post there, I said to him, "Chief, what do you need from me? What do you want me to do?" And he said, "Timmy, there's not much you and I can do." He said, "I've ordered a fifth alarm. The first five alarms are going to Tower 1. We're getting the second five alarms coming from further away." He said, "It's going to be a while." He said, "Just do your best and be careful." "Okay, Chief," running over. He turned to me and he said, he looked at me and he said, "You know we're at war, right?" I said, "I know we're at war." That's an important thing for America to remember, because there are people in our leadership who want to deny that this is a war. We are truly at war. It's not conventional, it's different, but we are at war. Got over into the lobby of Tower 2, and a civilian came over to me and said, "There are people trapped in the elevator over here." I said, "Show me." So he took me around, and the elevator door was open. The hoistway doors were open. And you could see into the shaft, but the car had only come down so you could see about a foot of it at the top of the opening. And you could see all these feet in there, all these people that were struggling to get out of the elevator. The men were trying to put their arms like this and push it down, but they're certainly not strong enough to do that. The problem was the elevator pit was on fire with jet fuel, and they were getting cooked like a barbecue. And here I am in my tie, and there's not a lot I can do. I told the Port Authority folks, "Go get me as many fire extinguishers as you can. We'll try to fight it." They brought me a fire extinguishers that didn't work. And I don't know if they were used before or if they weren't charged properly. I don't know what, but not one of them worked. So in my frustration at helping these people that were burning to death, I turned and my shoulder hit someone. And I turned around and it was a fireman, Mike Lynch, who was one of my probies when I was in Times Square, when I worked there. Real good, competent young guy. He put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Timmy, I got it." And at that moment, he might as well have had angel's wings, because I knew he was going to get those people out, or that he would die trying. I left him there with his guys to go do my job at the command post. Tried to call the White House, believe it or not, because I knew we had to get planes overhead. There was a rumor on our radios that one of the third hijacked plane was coming for us again. So I wound up dialing zero, and I got this poor woman on the phone who was so helpful, tried to help me as much as she could. She could not get through. And she's the one that told me that the Pentagon had been attacked also. I didn't know that. Finally, she got me to the New York State Office of Emergency Management, and I requested that they get some fighter jets over our heads now, and they told me that they had already been requested. and that they were coming our way very fast. The lobby was filling up with badly injured people. What happened was when they came down the stairwell and they made it to the lobby of the tower, they thought they were safe. The problem with that is that the lobby filled up and there was no way for the people to get down out of the stairwell. So the chief told me, go get the paramedics, get EMS, let's start getting these people out of here. So I ran out onto Liberty Street, which is the south side of the complex. And I ran fast, really fast, because there was all kinds of stuff coming down, bodies and building parts and plane parts. When I got out onto Liberty Street, I saw Mike Lynch again, the angel. And he was taking the jaws of life, the motor, off his truck. But it's really heavy. It's hard to do with one person. He was reaching up high to get it. And he asked me to run over and help him. So I started running toward him. And another firefighter got to him before I did. And I said, okay, Mike, and waved to him. That was the last time I saw him. I ran down. One fireman had already been killed by a jumper. And so I knew it was very dangerous, and there was a good chance that I would get crushed. But I ran fast, and I made it, and I got down to where our special operations paramedics were. Charlie Wells, good guy. I had gone to Oklahoma City with him and other places. And I told him, Charlie, we've got to get some of your guys inside to start moving these people. And he said, no, we're setting up here. We're not going in. This is how we do it. And I said, no, not this time it isn't. You have to come in. The firemen are all going in and up the stairwells. They're not going to get these people out. You need to get them out. So he said, okay. They put their helmets on. Three of those paramedics and myself ran back to Tower 2. We got about 25 feet from the door of Tower 2 to go back in the tower when the building collapsed. And there was no mistaking it. You could hear the first floor, douche, down onto the next floor, pancake collapse. And then you could hear the next one, doosh, and then the next one, doosh, and it just kept sitting down more and more. We call it progressive collapse. It was very clear what was happening. We ran into the adjoining building, which was the Marriott Hotel. I think it was 22 stories. And we ducked into the first floor, which is the Tall Ships restaurant, to try and get some protection over our heads. When Tower 2 came down, and there's video of this, maybe it'll be in the thing you show. When the tower came down, it landed on top of 3 World Trade Center, where I was, and 3 came down on top of us. There's a photo of the area where we were confined. I wouldn't say trapped, because we weren't really physically pinned, but it was about 3 stories tall. On one end of the very wide building. That's all that was left. And that area is where we lived. It was about 30 people there. I ran into the lobby of the restaurant. It was clear as a bell, like this. And just like that, it went black. Dust in your face. The wind was tremendous. The noise was unbearable. The only way I could imagine to describe the noise to you would be if you were sitting in the middle of a runway and there were 10 747s around you with all their engines on. It was just that loud. I grabbed onto a big column like this, and I made myself as close to the column as I could. The wind kept picking up. My legs were up in the air. It was trying to blow me out away from the column. And my thought was how unfair it was that I couldn't hold my brother Chris one more time. I lost my helmet, lost my phone, my pager, blown right off of me, and I just waited to die. And then the noise stopped. The wind stopped. It was all dust. You still couldn't breathe and you couldn't see. But I couldn't believe that I survived it. Now it was time to get out. I went back the way I had come in, but it was no longer there. I ran into a truck that was, the motor was on, the headlights were on. And I didn't recognize it as a fire truck, and I don't know to this day if it was or if it was not. I would think I would have recognized it. But all I could think in the state of mind I was in was that it was a truck bomb. And so I started running the other way, away from it, and yelling to everybody, you know, it's a bomb, going the other way. We ran into a roll-down gate. We went to lift the gate up, and when we lifted it up a little bit, all these fingers came from the other side. So we got it up together, and the people on that side of the gate also lived, but they said that you can't go this way, there's nothing there, it's all rubble. So we turned around, and a fireman now had come climbing over the debris with his flashlight, and we could see his flashlight. And so we went that way, and he got us out. They were all now Maydays on the radio. Everybody was screaming for help. People were trapped. My boss was trapped. So I started running toward him, and by the time I got to him, some firemen had already gotten him out of the rubble. We got the paramedics with him. And then his boss, my bigger boss, John Odermatt, he was a 4-star NYPD guy, great friend, said the mayor wants us to go find him and to stay with him. So that's what we did. We started running north to go find the mayor, and Tower 1 came down. And I knew that Terry was in there. I watched it just like you guys did. I watched the antenna kick over a little bit and then disappear. And I knew that I lost my best friend and a lot of my friends. I lost 93 of my friends that day. And luckily I survived that second collapse. The guy Mike with the angel wings, Mike Lynch, they found his body about, I think, 5 weeks later. In the rubble with the hearse tool, the jaws of life, and with the people that were in the elevator. They found all their bodies right next to each other. There is a woman who tells the story of the fireman with the red 4 on his helmet that got her out of the elevator that we're talking about. So we know for sure that Mike saved at least one person out of that elevator before he left us. My other best friend, Patrick Brown, captain of Ladder 3, who was the highest decorated active New York City fireman, murdered that day, was running up the stairs. He was a highly decorated U.S. Marine in Vietnam. Unstoppable guy. Because he knew his friend Terry was trapped, because Terry was calling for help on the radio. Several firemen tried to stop him from going up the stairs and tried to turn him around and send him down, but he wanted none of it. And they found both of them near each other. In the days after that, in our shock, we went to hundreds and hundreds of wakes and funerals. You would have a memorial service because you didn't find the body, and then they'd find the body, and you'd also have a funeral. We buried our friends, and we tried to stand up the best that we could. I got real close with Rudy then. I mean, I knew him before, but my friend Terry, my best friend, married his executive assistant, who's been with the mayor for now 30 years. And so Terry was like a son to the mayor, and I got to know him very well. That's was the beginning of my friendship with him. He went to a lot of funerals. And he didn't do that after 9/11. He did that before 9/11. He always was there when a cop got shot. He always wanted to be the one that told the family his responsibility. So we lived through the years. We always dreamed of maybe catching this guy Bin Laden one day. So on May 1st, Sunday evening, when they broke in and said the president was going to make an important national security announcement, we didn't expect that. You know, we thought Libya, Gaddafi, something's going on. Maybe they got Gaddafi. So when I first found out, I was stunned. Jaw on the floor, stunned. And then I was elated and joyful that we got him, and proud that we got him. But then I cried. I cried for the loss of my friends. I cried over, you know, why did this happen in the first place? Beginning that night at 1 a.m., or actually Monday morning at 1 a.m., I did 14 interviews from 1 a.m. to 11 p.m. on every television station in the world. Through the day, I talked with a lot of the family members that I'm close with, and my friend Donnie Regan, who was a fireman in Rescue 3, who I worked with for years, his daughter called me, Jill, and she said, I have mixed emotions, just like everybody does. She said, but I don't want all this. I just want my dad. And that pretty much sums it all up. We didn't want all this. We didn't ask for it. Who could hate us so much to do this to us? They intended to kill as many firemen as they could. They planned it. They timed the second plane to kill as many cops and firemen as they could. They were calling in false alarms for a month to test the response time. So life goes on, right? You do what you need to do to survive. Try and put your life back together. Try and find new laughter and new love in your life. Being grateful that, you know, you made it. And then you see all the cops and firemen and construction workers start to die from cancer. Between September 11th, 2001 and June, I guess, 30th of 2010, 600 cops, firemen, and construction workers are dead or dying from cancer. There will be a study coming out in August conducted by Dr. David Prezant, the fire department's lung doctor, who has become the leading lung expert probably in the world now, that will prove conclusively, finally, that they're still, you know, those terrorists are still killing us. I have two spots on my lungs that are very small, and as long as they don't grow, I'm okay. But if they start to grow, I'm going to have a problem. We're burying almost one a week now between the cops, firemen, and construction workers. So about 2 years ago, I got a phone call from Jimmy Boyle, a kind of a legend in the New York City Fire Department, old retired guy, who was the president of our union for 8 years. He lost his son, Michael, on September 11th, who was a firefighter. Jimmy called me and said, Tim, I've got someone, the families need help. They need your help. And I said, of course, Jimmy, what do you need? He said, well, there's this woman, Deborah Burlingame, who I'm going to give your phone number to. You need to talk to her. She'll explain it. And I said, Deborah Burlingame, are you kidding me? I love her. I never met her, but I read her stuff in the Wall Street Journal all the time. And she lost her, her brother was the pilot of the plane that went into the Pentagon. Chick Burlingame, who was a Navy fighter pilot. Let me tell you about Deborah. She's a lawyer. She's an expert in PR. Brilliant lady and very passionate about defending her brother's name. And she's a patriot for defending this country. There's a recording, a 7-minute recording, of her brother being brutally and viciously murdered in the cockpit of his plane as he tried to fight off the terrorists. And she listened to it. They finally got him, but he survived for 7 minutes. That's how brave she is. So Deborah said, the president and Attorney General Holder want to hold civilian trials in Lower Manhattan for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his cohorts. And I was just in disbelief. And she said, we have to stop this. We cannot allow this to happen. So the next thing you know, we became activists, which is a joke, because we're not so not that. And we actually had to fight Obama and Holder to prevent this civilian trial from occurring, this circus trial from occurring in Lower Manhattan, and giving these guys a stage to recruit more jihadis and to make fun of us. Right at the place where, you know, the greatest crime, their greatest victory occurred. So through my website and some other things, within 4 days we had 150,000 signatures that agreed with us. And we wound up going into some Senate hearings and some House hearings and tried to start turning the tide. Congressman Pete King was the first person that jumped on board with us. Of course, Rudy. And when Police Commissioner Kelly finally told the business community downtown what it would do to their community, and they talked Bloomberg's language and said, no money. He went, what do you mean, no money? No money. Downtown will be locked down for 10 years. It will kill Lower Manhattan. And that's when the tide turned and we began to win. And with our, what we hope is a victory, it also meant that they could not close Guantanamo, which was one of Obama's campaign promises. So to this day, we think we have won that. We think most of America agrees with us. And we think most of America has common sense, not like our leaders. On July 27th, we will go to the Office of Military Commissions in the Department of Defense, and we're going to show them a film called Rebirth, because these are the people that are going to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and company, the actual prosecutors. So we're going to show them this film, which I'll tell you about in a minute, to make sure they still remember the families and how difficult this has been for us, the families and the survivors. These folks, I've met them, they are patriots. And they will try these very bad people for us, on our behalf. Then, since we became activists, I became involved with trying to stop this thing called the Mosque at Ground Zero. And at first, when I met with Imam Rauf and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Sharif al-Gamal, I didn't think they were such bad guys at first. But when you start digging And when you figure out the question you just asked them never got answered. He talked to you for 15 minutes, but he never answered the question. To this day, we still don't know where the $4.85 million came from that bought that property. It's still a secret. This coming from the peace-loving interfaith Imam Rauf, which is a joke, and Sharif El-Gamal, who's been arrested 7 times. I call him the criminal. Friday morning, he'll be on the John Gambling show claiming that the project is still going forward and that he's just a nice guy that wants to do good things at Ground Zero. But then they say it's not really at Ground Zero. Well, the landing gear went through the roof of this building. I consider it at Ground Zero. So we will continue to fight that fight. And it is truly good versus evil. They've seen this in England, in France, in Germany already, and it's starting here. But I have faith in this country that we will embrace our Constitution. We will defend our Constitution. We will defend our flag. I am suing the Landmarks Preservation Commission and Mayor Bloomberg for giving these folks special treatment and for breaking their own laws and regulations. We're thinking the decision will come down Friday from the judge. If we win, it means we get discovery, which means Bloomberg's office has to give up all the email back and forths that where they coordinated to go after us. Bloomberg is the guy who stood on Governor's Island with the Manhattan in the background and went like this to the 9/11 families, like this. You should be ashamed of yourselves, to us. Because he thinks that mosque should be built there. So this film called Rebirth is a documentary film by Jim Whittaker it's about the lives of 5 people over the last 9 years. The film is about devastation, resilience, and hope, resilience of the human spirit. And the cameras, I'm one of the subjects, the cameras follow us for 9 years through our difficult times. And in the end, it's pretty hopeful, but the film got 2 standing ovations and rave reviews out at Sundance, where it premiered. It will be in theaters in August, and it will premiere on Showtime channel on September 11th in primetime. And it's a very powerful, honest portrayal of what this has done to us. So I recommend if you have a chance to take a look at it, to watch it. And that's it. You want to do questions, or you want to keep moving quick, or what do you want to do? And I'll be around afterwards.
That they'd like to ask Tim while he's up here, or like I said, he's going to be spending. You're staying the night too, right?
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Unless you find a better deal, I know. I know how that goes.
Might have a cigar or some beer.
Anybody have anything for Tim? If not, let's give him a big hand for being here.
Thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the POAM Podcast Radio Show. I want to remind you that each and every month you can find every single podcast online on Apple iTunes. Just search for POAM. They're also available for download or for live listen on our website. Visit us at POAM.net. Get on our newsletter and send us all of your comments and suggestions for future shows.